Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers journey through the wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends, Tom and Harry. Join us as we make our way through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Your hosts today are my fellow Trek actors, Armin Shimerman, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong.
For the complete and exciting version of this podcast, check out patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers and sign up to become a patron today. Well, hello, gentlemen.
Hello. Hello. And may I add, sign up now.
Sign up now.
Do it before you forget.
That's right. Right now, pause this podcast. Go to patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers. Check out all the benefits and the perks. We put out a lot of stuff, lots of cool opportunities, bonus material, and things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's great to go into the detail, Robbie, but because Quark has given everyone an order, I think that's enough. He just said, sign up now. So,
that's right.
Didn't work much in this episode, Quark giving orders.
But... No.
You will. Yeah, we'll get to that when we get to, that. Okay. We do have some birthdays, though.
Yes.
We do need to talk about the people that have birthdays today. So right off the bat, Robbie, who has the first birthday you have
the
to
The first
talk about?
Birthday I see coming up is David Buck on February 23rd. Happy birthday, David.
Happy birthday, David. Number one. You're number one on the call sheet.
Happy birthday, David.
Matt Edmonds on February 26th. Happy birthday, Matt.
Happy birthday, Matt. Congratulations.
Happy birthday, Matty Matt. We also have to welcome a very new prophet. We have a brand new prophet, and that would be our good friend, Luce. So congratulations, Luce.
Welcome, Luce. Welcome.
Welcome, Luce. Good to have you in the prophet level. You are a god.
I'm glad you said god and not goddess.
Yes. She's a god. Exactly.
She's a god.
Yes.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
I am so excited about my poem today. Ooh. This one just spilled out. You know, sometimes you struggle for a long, long time. All right, here we go. My poetry synopsis for this episode. Odo and Kira get trapped on the moon. A growing crystal could smother Kira pretty soon. Nog has a Starfleet dream. It's not a joke or a scheme. From love and heartbreak, even changelings aren't immune.
Wow, lovely.
It's really nice.
That one just came out. It's not super funny, but it just flowed.
I like rhyming scheme and dream. That's very nice.
Thank you.
Here is my haiku for Heart of Stone. Kira's foot is stuck. Nog would like to join Starfleet. Sneaky changeling boss.
Very funny.
Yes, excellent.
Yes, she was
excellent.
Very sneaky.
Excellent.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Armin.
Etymology.
So, no etymology today.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I have poetry for you.
What?
Now, excuse? I didn't write it, so don't get too excited.
Oh, okay.
This was written about 450 years ago. The title, Heart of Stone, was first written by a man named William Shakespeare. It is from a play called Twelfth Night, a play that I am directing right now.
And
we may have opened by the time you see this. And it is from Act 3, Scene 4, line 1743. Olivia says it to Viola, and she says, I have said too much unto a heart of stone, and laid mine honor to uncherry out. There's something in me that reproves my fault, but such a headstrong, potent fault it is, that it but mocks reproof. And you know what? I don't know whether they were considering that quote when they chose this for the title, but it does play into the episode quite a bit.
Yeah.
So if it's serendipity, that's good. If it was purposeful, you know, more power to the writers.
Well, you are right on that hunch. It was purposeful. The title of this episode comes from, and the plot was partly inspired by William Shakespeare's Twelfth Night. So yes, you got
And
that
what's
right.
interesting, if I may, this is said, this quote is said when one of the lovers, well, call it that, when Olivia realizes that she has put her heart out to another, and that person has rejected them, has rejected her. So, in a sense, that's what happens in this episode. Or at least the rejection isn't there, but the putting your heart out for it to be open and available is does happen in the episode.
Interesting.
There's another influence, gentlemen, for the writing of this script, and it was, or at least for the Kira and Odo storyline in this episode, it was partly based on a 1964 Ken Casey novel, Sometimes a Great Notion, which then became a 1971 film. So in the book and also the film, a character's leg is trapped underneath a large log, causing him to subsequently drown when he is unable to free his when he is unable to free his leg to prevent water rising above his head.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with that particular moment in the film, but it is one of the most terrifying scenes that I have ever seen on film.
I don't think I've
And
seen the movie before.
the actor who is drowning gives a brilliant, beyond brilliant performance as the hero is trying to save him from this death, and the guy drowning thinks it's very funny. He's drowning and he thinks it's funny. It is a horrifying moment in the film. I will never forget that scene. And I'm old and I've forgotten the name of the actor who I'm referring to. If you any way just to see that scene, that moment, it's well worth watching.
What's the name of the movie again?
Sometimes a
Sometimes
great moment.
a
A
great
great
notion.
notion.
Sometimes a great notion. Okay. I'll have to
And
check that out. I've never seen it.
quote from Ira Stephen Bear on the film adaptation of Sometimes a Great Notion, and that particular scene that Armin just referenced, how riveting it was. Ira says, "It's a great scene in a not so great movie." So that's the one thing that stood out, and that's the one thing you remember from that movie, Armin,
That's
is
right. That's
that
right.
horrifying and riveting performance by that actor in that horrible
And he
circumstance.
wasn't the lead actor, and I really should remember who the actor was, but he dies relatively early in the movie. It is a brilliant performance. A brilliant performance.
That's awesome.
Sounds like a terrifying scene. I wonder if Nana had seen that, if anyone mentioned it to her and she watched that in terms of her performance or her circumstances in this.
If she did, there's no connection. What the actor does and what Nana does in the scene are radically different.
Radically different,
So,
okay.
well, although the writing might indicate once or twice that that the writers indeed were familiar with the scene because what they ask a Nana to do, and she does it, but it's not comparable.
Well,
All
when
right.
interviewed about this episode, Nana did explain that this was a difficult episode to for her to film primarily because of her claustrophobia. So if you think about it, especially towards the end when she's completely encased in
Oh God,
that
yeah. I'm
crystal and
claustrophobic. I can relate to that. I can't feel trapped. It's the worst feeling.
It really is. It really is.
I'm looking at the shots, and yes, I knew that too, that this was a problem for Nana. But I asked myself, why did they need the back? If she was claustrophobic, that meant she was encased in the structure. Why did they need the back? They never shot
You
the
don't see
back,
it, no.
ever.
You see a little bit on the top when it's
On the
way up
top,
here.
I mean, when you go to the dentist and they take X-rays, they put the lead thing on. It could have been that. We didn't need to have a back. She didn't have to be. She didn't have to suffer from her claustrophobia. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I don't know.
I wonder if also for Nana, because she's a dancer, because she was so used to moving and expressing herself as an actor through her movement and her body, to feel like that tool is taken away completely must have felt, unusual for her, I would think.
Yes, absolutely. I once did a play where I was encased in an urn, and I don't suffer, thankfully, from claustrophobia. So,
Yeah.
but I do remember it was very confining.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way, just was, oh, okay, but that's what the situation. No different, really,
Right.
than wearing prosthetic makeup,
Yeah.
really.
Yes.
Hmm.
What else you
Okay.
got there, Garrett? Any more
Well,
trivias?
yeah, a little more trivia. Cast and crew alike absolutely did not enjoy the crystalline rock formation. They thought
Really?
it was, yeah, the visual effects for that and the actual prop itself of the rock was a horrible prop. Ira Stephen Bear called it that horrible, horrible prop of a rock. That's what he called it. Nana said that when she read the script, she had envisioned something completely different. And when they filmed with what they filmed, she felt like it looked nothing like what she had envisioned. And she felt like it was a big old hot fudge sundae with her head as the cherry on top, is what how she felt. So Alexander Singer, the director, Alex Singer said, nothing made the pinkish lavender rock look more realistic. So whatever they tried to do, it was just very disappointing that the prop did not come out the way they wanted to.
So I have a question for Robbie about that.
Yes, sir.
If everybody hated this prop, certainly they must have looked at it before we started shooting. Why didn't
Someone
somebody at
say
the
something.
say, no, go back to the table and work something else out. This looks horrible.
Yeah.
Why didn't that ha I realize it's a bottle show and they're trying to save money,
Yeah.
but this couldn't have cost that much to make.
Yeah, I don't know, Mike. I've been in situations like that before where you've got this design, everybody's talked about it forever. You finally all agree and sign off on the design portion, and then it's delivered at the last minute. They probably didn't see this prop because of the schedule. You guys made this show every 7 days. You were doing a new
Eight
episode,
to
8 days.
8 days.
So they probably didn't see it much more than the day before. And I don't know if they saw it on camera because they would have to do a film test to really know how it photographs. So sometimes you don't know until you're out there doing it. Nowadays, I would say that if that happened, I would go ahead and shoot it and make a note that we're going to enhance this with visual effects, that
Right.
we have to do something, that it's you can't stop shooting, but you would make it look better. We've done that on Resident Alien with some of the bits and gags where it just doesn't quite look great when we film it, but you enhance it later on. They didn't have the technology back then.
It's a prop that looks like from the original Star Trek series,
It
rather than something, 20, 30 years later.
does.
Well, continuing on what Armin said, Robbie, if they didn't have the prop ready to show the director and the actors, would they have shown them a sketch or would it just have been
Oh,
just,
yeah. They would have seen a design
something?
and a concept and a plan of how are we going to, show these different stages and what's the process that we swap out, this stage for the next stage. And they had a plan, I have no doubt. And they may have seen it beforehand, but sometimes unless you film, the prop to your eye, you might kind of go, it doesn't look great, but when it's on film, it'll look better. And then you film it and it's worse.
Is that why the lighting in those scenes was so dark? Was to take the light off the prop?
Maybe. I mean, I as in all cave scenes on Star Trek, I often wonder where is the light coming from? They did
Exactly.
eventually have that tripod with a light on it that I saw in a wide shot, but yeah, it's always tricky in these cave scenes to motivate where the light comes from because a real cave is pitch black, no light. Yeah.
So on Voyager, we always use those silly flashlights that were on our
On your
wrists,
wrist, yeah.
yes, to sort of illuminate the caves. Written by Ira Stephen Bear and our good friend Robert Hewitt Wolff, directed by Alex Singer.
Oh.
And interestingly enough, I mean, we don't have any guest stars that we don't already know about. We know Aaron Eisenberg, we know Max Gruenchik. But Salome Jens actually agreed to have her credit at the end so that it wouldn't give away the secret
Oh.
twist, which is nice. I mean, I think an actor can be a little can act like a diva and say, no, I will not have my name at the end. But Salome was a team player and wanted the reveal to be a true reveal. So I love
that. Oh, that's clever.
Perhaps the background on that is that Salome Jens is one of the American theater's finest actors. She's been doing theater all of her life. So the idea of being part of an ensemble and giving a little here and there is part of her DNA. So probably... Her agent probably didn't like it, but she probably said, no, if this helps the story, let's do it.
Yeah. And you're right, guys, this is a bottle show because they had to make up for all the money they spent on past tense, that whole, you know, the whole earth and what was it? Bell riots. Yes, the bell riots thing. So that took a lot of money. And so this is a nice little bottle show to make up for those overspending budgets that they had before.
I love that Alex Singer directed your show. We had Alex on our show a few times. I loved him. What a great guy.
Yeah. I wish he was my grandfather.
So much fun. Great storyteller.
That's how much I loved him. Yeah.
Oh, he was awesome. Loved Alex Singer. All right. Well, let's dive right in. We've got a log at the beginning of this. First officer's log. So it's Kira, I think. Stardate 48521.5. Kira says, Odo and I are returning to Deep Space Nine after reviewing security procedures at Prophet's Landing, the Bajoran colony closest to the Cardassian border. So we come into the runabout, the Mekong. Odo's very grumpy in this scene. He's very, very grumpy.
You can tell he's grumpy. He does this. Whenever he does this, that's when he's grumpy.
Exactly. He was grumpy because Kira said no to dinner without asking what he wanted.
Which, okay, if you step back, what is this? This is basically a little bit of a tiff between a couple. This is a lover's quarrel entirely. You didn't ask me. You didn't get my permission, or you didn't consult me first. And that's what I loved about this scene.
It's very funny.
Yeah.
Let us remember, as we talk about this episode, that previous to this episode, Kira has just lost Beryl.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
And this is very important to me as I watch this episode.
Yeah. Actually, now that you put it in that context, it is important for Odo to remember as well.
And for the arc for Kira as well.
Yeah. I just love that Odo's the one who wants to be the one to say no to dinner.
Especially when he doesn't eat.
Exactly.
Another thing we kind of glazed over is that beginning log. And also in the scene, they talk about that colony. What a cool and creative name for the colony itself. Prophet's what Landing. Nobody's even said anything about that.
That's right.
It's catchy. Yeah. It's Prophet's Landing. Yeah, the Prophets. Anyway.
It sounds like a shopping mall. Oh, I got to go do some Christmas shopping at Prophet's Landing.
Have you been to that amazing Bajoran mall? Prophet's Landing? It's fabulous. Yeah.
But it's in the Badlands. You have to take a while to get there.
Yeah.
It does.
You may or may not make it to the mall. Parking is horrible. Yeah.
Yes. But they pick up a distress call. A Lesepian supply ship has been attacked by a Peregrine class Maquis ship. And there's only one life sign on this Maquis ship. And he sees it on sensors. So they decide to follow this Maquis ship. It's always going to lead to trouble.
So here's the first of many quibbles.
Me too. Full disclosure.
If they know it's a life sign, can't they distinguish what kind of life sign it is? I mean, how do you know it's a life sign? How do you distinguish a life sign? The makeup of this particular character on this ship, without giving anything away, is different than some other life signs.
Yes. You mean the genetic makeup?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, not the prosthetics. Okay. No. Okay. The genetic makeup. Okay. It shouldn't have that come up.
All right. Well,
you would think so.
Never mind. If go any further is to give things
I'm
away.
I'm picking up a single Cardassian life sign on the thing, right?
Yes.
I'm picking up three Klingon life signs on the thing. Yeah, you'd think they would know.
We have seen that where they go, you know, there's one human aboard. Yeah, they can do that. So you
Yeah.
shouldn't. Now, granted.
They should know what kind of life signs on there. Agreed.
You know what I love about what Armin said? He goes, "Here's my quibble." And then I immediately thought about there used to be a pet food that used to advertise all the time called
Kibble?
Kibbles and Bits, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And so this would be the new segment of the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Armin, Quibbles and Bits, and where
Quibbles and
he.
Bits. I love that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have a
A new
long list to
segment.
give you. So.
Yes, but for me, I love playing devil's advocate to throw out the other viewpoint. And that would be because I mean, we now know who's behind this, right? So this is a very powerful person, individual. And I feel that they are able to mask the life sign. They're able to, just like you've
Maybe.
seen other episodes where Sisko will say, or Brian will say, I am basically making it so that our runabout gives off this to sensors, where we are going to be masked as a transport and not a runabout. So if you're able to mask your readings to fake people out in terms of what ship you are, I'm assuming you could do the same thing about what type of
Maybe.
what type of human being or being you are.
It feels like a quibble and bit from Armin that could have easily been solved with some dialogue. They could have said
Yes, of
something like, we're
course, of
picking up
course.
one life signs, can't determine exactly what it is,
Yeah, too
there's
much interference.
interference.
There's
Yeah,
something going on with
something
their ship.
could have
They've lost attitude
easily
control.
been
Yes, you're right.
solved.
You're right. You're right. That quibble could have been quickly solved.
Could have been a bit.
It could have just been a bit.
But now it's still a
A
quibble.
smaller bit,
Smaller
but it's
bit.
still a quibble.
Okay, so we've got the they decide to chase this thing, and then we've got our opening credits. They're chasing him. We come back. They're close to this Peregrine class ship. They're close to it, but this thing's going pretty fast. They're in the Badlands. Their sensors are getting jammed. Hard to get a lock on him. So they do sort of reference here. They're trying to beam him over, but they can't get a lock on him. And then the Badlands are giving them all kinds of trouble with their communication sensors and things. Anyway, he disappears in onto a moon. There's a moon here. They decide to follow him onto the moon, and it's not gonna go well. It never goes well when you go down on a moon. I don't think we've ever gone to a moon and had a great time. Any of the characters. Never. Or an unknown planet. Don't go there.
Yeah, but look at the last line, next to last line from Odo. I don't know. Something in the moon's atmosphere is jamming our sensors. Anytime something jams your
Yeah.
sensors, you know it's trouble. It's always
Yeah.
going to be trouble.
And what is Kira's response?
I guess we'll have to land and see for ourselves. It's the typical
Exactly.
response. It's like, huh?
Yeah,
That's.
let me ask a question, not a quibble or a bit, but a question. Is there a distress signal? No.
No.
So if there's no distress signal, what are they
Well,
doing going
yeah.
after the ship if there's no distress signal?
Because they attack the
Now
Lesepian
Odo
transport.
says the ship's in trouble.
Yes.
I get that. I suppose that's enough. I suppose that's
Yeah, I think they're
enough.
chasing this Maquis bad guy that attacks somebody, and they're trying to be the hero.
They're trying to be the hero. Exactly. Well put.
Yeah. They're trying to be the hero. They have no authorization. They weren't even involved in this thing. And
No.
they're going to go down to a moon that's jamming their sensors.
Yeah.
Not smart. Not
No,
smart.
not good. Next up, we are in the commander's office. We basically see Sisko kind of looking over some information on a pad, and O'Brien calls Sisko, and Sisko's like, "What's going on?" And he says, "Well, there's someone here to see you." And it's Nog. And this is very surprising because honestly, I don't. Has there ever been a scene with Nog and Sisko
There's
until
been
now
scenes with them, like
in
with
the same
Jake.
scene, but not
But I
with.
don't. You're right. I don't think Nog has ever been in ops before on the
No.
program.
No, he's definitely never been in Commander's office either, right? So yeah, that's
I
again.
love the way that Alex Singer framed Nog waiting outside.
And I hated that.
Oh, you
Oh,
did?
yes, I did. Let's go into this. Why did you like it?
Because we've never seen him there. You had O'Brien. It was almost like he was down in the pit or something. It was like the the groundling who doesn't ever get a chance to come into Oz or something. It felt like Oz. It felt like somebody had entered Oz and this amazing place, and I thought it was funny. I thought it not funny, but yeah, I thought it was fitting for Nog coming to ask the wizard for something. That's how I
Okay. Armin?
And it's that very reason that I didn't like it. So for me, when I saw that shot, having played many judges over the course of my career, it looks like a judge
Oh,
looking
interesting.
at a defendant. So, okay, and that has some credence to it. But because I'm a huge Ferengi advocate, it made Nog look like so inconsequential. That in my mind, it's another slap at the Ferengi. They're just these tiny, small, insignificant things that have no business being in ops. That's what that shot said to me. That's the point of view that I come from.
I
Well,
get that.
yes, being that you played a Ferengi, that's definitely a trigger for you in terms of the treatment of Ferengi on the show, at least in the beginning, the first few seasons.
I can understand the arc of the character that what you said, Robbie, is actually probably quite right for this episode, because Aaron is Nog is going to go through a great arc, or at least an arc in this episode. So maybe starting out as an insignificant figure is the right thing to do. It just a personal
It just reinforces the bias.
quibble and bit.
Quibble and bit.
I'm so glad that I've penned that I've coined that
That's a
now.
great. I love it.
But Armin, let's say we reversed it. Let's say now the camera's lower and it's like a hero shot on Nog. It doesn't make sense for the storyline at all.
That's
So
right. That's
yeah,
right.
so
That's right.
you do see the
But there could
logic
have
of
been
it.
a midway point,
Oh
you
yeah,
know?
oh yeah.
You could have
It was
shot him like
extreme.
any other character in this episode. You could have, this one is demeaning. It's a
It was
demeaning.
very extreme for sure.
So you're just saying, Armin, you're just asking for a little change in the angle of degree. That's it. You don't have to be that extreme, is what you're saying. Okay, I'll buy that.
Also, having been on ops many times, the floor isn't that far down from the desk.
I couldn't tell where he was. That's why I said, was he in the pit? It was very extreme.
It was very extreme. It was really, to me, because I played judges, it's a shot of a judge
It
looking
feels like
down
that.
at somebody who's in front of their big desk. There is no big desk in ops, so
Nog is in ops telling O'Brien to tell Sisko that it's urgent. O'Brien does relay that message in, and I love Avery's take on when he said send him. He's like, send him in, because he has no clue what's going on, right? But very well played by Avery in terms of that throwaway, like, okay, send him in, I guess.
I love when Nog's last line to O'Brien when he says, "I told you he'd see me." I love that.
Exactly.
Very
Very
funny.
good. Well, he does enter. He shakes Sisko's hand.
I don't know who came up with that. I don't know if that's in the script or not,
It's
but
not in the
it's
script.
not in the script. Nope.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's Aaron. It probably is Aaron. If it's not in the
Probably.
script, I don't think it was Alex Singer. So I really like what that says to me is that I'm trying to reach out and to do human behavior, not Ferengi behavior. Ferengi never shake hands, but to do a human behavior, to say, yes, I can be part of your group. And I love the way the handshakes change over the course of this episode.
You know what? I was wrong. I went back. It wasn't in the transcript I had, but I went to the original script. It does say Nog sticks his hand out for Sisko
Okay,
to
then it's
shake.
Ira or
Okay.
Robert Hewitt Wolf, in which case, bravo to the two writers, because I really like that detail. That's
I did
not a
too.
quibble or bit. That's a I like that.
Yeah, a nonverbal communication, and it works quite well because there's that through line of it throughout. Because at
That's
times
right.
Sisko does shake it, and other times he doesn't. So it's very telling. But he is there to make the announcement that he has just completed the Ferengi attainment ceremony, which is, it's
It's a bar
now.
mitzvah.
It's a bar mitzvah,
It's a
is what I
bar
was going to
mitzvah,
say, or a
exactly.
bat mitzvah if you're a female. But yes, he's an adult now, finally. And one of the things about being an adult, a Ferengi adult, is that he has to choose a mentor to apprentice under, and he's there to choose Cisco. And to commemorate this moment, he has a handful of latinum to give as a gift.
It's like in a bag, right? It's like
Yeah,
a
it's a bag
it's
of
a
latinum.
bundle. I think the
a
best
bundle,
bundle.
yes.
Bundle. It's a
A
bundle of
bundle of
bundle.
latinum. Yeah. Nog says in this scene he wants to be a Starfleet officer. Says basically, I want you to be, my mentor. I want you to help me. I want to go to the academy.
I don't think he says he wanted to go to the academy. I can't,
No,
that's a surprise
Cisco.
to him. Cisco says you have
Yeah.
to go to the academy.
You have to go to the academy. Nog says, where do I sign up?
Yeah. Well, first he says, where do I get my uniform? Like, who's going to hand out? Like, he already
Yeah.
thinks he just gets the uniform immediately. Yeah, no. And that's when Cisco says, you need to go to the academy first. And he says, okay, I'll just sign up for that easily. He doesn't understand the ramifications of what it takes to become a Starfleet officer.
And if we may also point out, sorry, that in a previous episode, Sisko has wanted Jake to go to the academy.
That is right.
And Jake says, no, that's not what he wants to do. So it's interesting that Jake's good friend Nog wants, in a sense, to take his place.
And that's also something that Robert Hewitt Wolff spoke about. He said that essentially, because we have already established that Jake does not want to follow in his father's footsteps, that opened a door for Nog to be that person. And that was the right way to go. I think a lot of people are very happy about this twist and turn in the plot for young Nog.
I think in the scene, he doesn't say no, but
He says he'll think about it. That's all he
he
says. I'll think
says,
about it.
yeah, I'm afraid it doesn't work that way. We just don't give, we don't just give Starfleet uniforms to anyone. And then does Nog pull out more Latin? He's like
No,
trying to
no,
bribe
no,
him.
no.
Oh, he
He
doesn't?
no, he
Oh, I
doesn't
thought
try to
he.
bribe him. And it's not a, it may be a
Not a
bribe. Of
bribe, a
course, it may be a
tradition.
bribe. But the tradition would be that if you're going to be my mentor, I have to pay you for that. That's the handshake is human. The
The
bundle of
latinum
latinum
is,
is Ferengi.
That makes sense.
And
That makes
that's
sense.
really what's happening in this episode. And for what I consider to be the A story and not the B story.
I agree with you, by the way.
The A story. And that's what's happening in the A story for me.
So in Ferengi culture, that is standard operating procedure.
In Ferengi culture, if you ask for anything, you have to pay for it.
And I think he says that. He doesn't he say something like it's tradition to after my attainment, sir, I must purchase an apprenticeship from a suitable role model. So he lays it all out there what that tradition is.
He makes the effort of being human first by sticking out his hand.
It's great. Well, Sisko says a non-Federation citizen needs a letter from a command level officer. And Nock says, okay, write me a letter. Sisko's like, well, let me think about this. So he's taken aback.
Yeah, I mean, we have to appreciate where Sisko's coming from, which is that up until now, Nog has done nothing at all to be worthy of going to the academy. Nothing. I mean, the last episode that I remember seeing him in, he was being misogynistic about the girls
Absolutely.
on the date, and he's thieved at the original episode. He's done a number of things. It's not just being a Ferengi. He has been an outlaw. And so I can understand Sisko's reticence about writing him a letter of recommendation, which of course would have his name on it and w would reflect back on his judgment about recommending someone like Nog for the academy.
Yeah, because up until now, we have not seen Nog walk the straight and narrow path
No.
at all. And really, the stuff that you have seen Nog in, it's talking about girls, it's doing funny little,
Typical teenager
typical
stuff.
teenage
Well, this is the first time I
things.
think that Nog has suggested that he's growing beyond that, that he's thinking about the future, and it's a big step for him
Well,
as a
he's
kid.
become an adult. Yes, I
But
mean,
the
he's become an
he's
adult.
had the ceremony. There you
The ceremony, I guess, was the
go.
catalyst or the spark plug, which really gave him focus. Because up until this point, he's sort of aimless in a way, the character. He's just, he's here in some episodes, other scenes, he's not. And now he has a very, very specific goal in mind. And now you see some aim and some drive and some purpose in this character, which is very exciting for the viewers.
To me, what it speaks to is the value of some of these traditions of a coming of age ceremony. You know, I think it's a loss in our culture, honestly, that some of these traditions have been minimized or, you know, so many people have gotten away from them because historically they've sort of marked these turns. And for Nog, it marked a moment where he had to intentionally and very consciously choose to stop being a child, stop being a teenager. Because all of that teenage behavior is normal, whether you're Ferengi or human or whatever, that's what you do. But at a certain point, culturally, you kind of go, all right, now you've done that. You've gotten sowed your wild oats or whatever. Now is the time where we expect you to behave differently. And I really think those traditions can be very valuable.
Well, we still have one that's always there, which is when people graduate from high school, they have to choose what the rest of their life is going to be. Are they going to continue with their education, or are they going to go out and get a job? That's a demarcation that we still have and that everybody has to face. What am I going to do when I get my diploma?
All right, we're back in the caves, back on the moon that they should never go to. They weren't invited, and there's all kinds of disturbances. They can't even communicate. Why are they going there? But they do.
The moon of death.
Yes. Looking for this fugitive. Lots of moonquakes. I'll introduce the moonquakes. Do moonquakes make sense, really?
No, and it doesn't help this episode in the least. I don't understand why they're there. It
The
doesn't
moonquakes.
make except that they don't really it doesn't they aren't really a threat. They aren't.
No.
And when you've seen the whole episode, they are meaningless.
They
They
really were
just.
only there to annoy Armin Shimerman. That's the
Yeah,
only reason.
exactly. But it doesn't help the episode. There's one moment where they deal with the moonquakes, and that's just that's fine. It's fine. It shows, but that's later on. Another scene. We'll talk about it then. These quakes don't make any difference.
No.
I don't have a problem with them. Robbie, clearly you're also team quibble and bit on this
I
point as
am.
well, and that's
Well, can you
fine.
tell me how they help? How they help the episode?
Well, they did help in that one
Yes,
part
in the
where,
one scene,
yeah, that one
exactly.
scene. But other than that, they didn't
You
need
could have
that
just
many
had
of
it
them. Like,
happen then. Oh my gosh, this new level of urgency as opposed to constant
Yes.
moonquakes. I just like to say, I feel like moonquakes, it feels like a dessert. Like, oh,
Well, that would be moon cake, not
moon cake.
moonquake,
Yeah,
right?
that's what I'm
So, yeah.
thinking.
And that's
Moonquake.
very popular in the Chinese culture. We have moon cakes for the moon festival, the autumn fall festival. So, yeah.
Growing up in the South, we had moon pies.
Yeah, that's right. Moon pies, which is,
Moon pie.
tell us what a moon pie is, Robbie, for those of us who don't
It's
know.
got like a cookie with marshmallow in the middle, and it's covered in chocolate,
Ch like a hard chocolate
like
shell,
a
kind of,
hard
right?
chocolate shell with a cookie, wait, kind of, yeah, something in marshmallow. It's pretty good, moon pies.
Yeah.
All right, so there's a moonquake. They're down in these caves. They decide to split up, which is never a smart idea.
No, why?
Let's split up and find that fugitive. We'll meet back here in 20 minutes, they
Can
say.
I go back to scene one just for a
Yes.
second?
Are we quibbling?
Yes, we're
Oh,
quibbling.
yeah.
So we've just, in that scene, we have a discussion about you didn't ask me for my opinion. You didn't ask me whether I wanted to go
That's
to the dinner or
right.
not. Kira doesn't really ask Odo, should we go down to this moon? He says, okay. In a sense, he says, okay. And
Yeah.
now the splitting up, there's no discussion whether this is good or bad. We know it's bad, but there's no discussion from Odo. It's just simply, I'm giving orders. I think there's quite a bit of this of just once we've actually got aired it, then she forgets about it. As though if we had that discussion, if any of us had that discussion with our significant others, with our wives, we would think, okay, I really should ask permission here. I should have a conversation here. If not permission, at least have a conversation.
We were reminded at the end of this episode that she's the superior officer. She could say no to dinner without asking him just based on rank. I mean,
Sure.
I get his personal point,
Yeah.
but yeah, she is the ranking officer
I
here.
mean, this is one of the few times where she pulls rank in an episode where she says, I'm your superior officer. Then, of course, he just resigns his commission.
Smart move.
I would say if you're going to set up that we need to talk about things, Why aren't they talking about things?
No, she's just bossing them around.
If you're going to track from that very first scene, when she says, I don't want to stay here any longer than we have to. I say we split up. We meet back here in 20 minutes. She could have said, I don't want to stay here any longer than we have to. What do you think, Odo? Should we split up? I mean, maybe we can meet back here. I mean, yes, she could have consulted him because of that prior conversation in the runabout. You're right.
Agreed.
Right. Okay.
So Odo's going down a passageway, and then he hears Kira calling for help in the distance.
Almost immediately.
Yeah, literally 5 seconds later. He turns around, runs back to help her, comes back to this chamber where he finds her foot stuck in what looks like, I don't know, a rock, basically, on the ground.
Yeah, what looks like a prop.
It does. Her foot has a crystal rock wrapped around it. And she says it's encased in this crystal, and it's spreading. So we set up her problem. She's got a rock growing around her feet. How do you step into a rock?
I don't know. She thought it was a fissure or something.
I guess so. Well, if there's moonquakes, there's all kinds of crazy things happening here. She stepped on a rock and it sucked her foot into it, I guess. Is what we're supposed to believe.
Right. It's what we're supposed to believe.
Yes.
Moon rocks can be dangerous as well.
Yes, they can. Everybody, PSA, watch out for moon rocks. If there's a moonquake, get out of there. All right, back in the chamber. This is where I made the note. How is there so much light in this cave? They didn't have flashlights on. I didn't see any lantern they brought with them, but it's bright. It was super bright in there. Just an aside.
You know what would have solved that, Robbie, is if they made the crystal the light source.
Like
if that thing was, yes. And now you got light. It makes sense.
Or if the walls had been luminescent.
Yes.
Because I don't know if I've told this story, but I'll tell it real quick. My son Carter came to visit us in Utah, and there are these cave tours you can go on. The Park Service, you have to reserve it. You go in these caves with the park ranger. We go down. We have to get on our knees sometimes to get into these chambers. And there's lights. They've, ran electrical so that there's lights in the caves. We get into a big chamber, and the park ranger says, this chamber is where the two young boys first discovered this cave system. He tells the story. And he said, I'm going to turn out the lights so you see what these boys saw 100 years ago when they stumbled upon these caves. And he turns out the lights. I have never felt such darkness in my life. It was, I had my hands like in front of my face, nothing. Like you could not see. Oh. So yeah, when I see scenes like this, I'm like, where's that light coming from? Because it's dark. Caves are dark. Anyway.
Yeah, so luminescent walls would have been good, like Armin said.
Would have helped.
Or a lantern. If they're going into caves, if they know they're going into caves, I'm sure they've got a lantern somewhere or that can illuminate.
Well, Kira's foot is stuck. Odo tries smashing it with a rock. He picks up a rock.
Yeah.
As opposed to morphing into something that could, like a mallet or a sledgehammer, what a wonderfully modern technical thing a rock is to smash another.
Yes.
In a sci-fi show, exactly.
Exactly. He can morph into anything. So Kira should have said, Odo, just morph into a jackhammer.
A jackhammer.
And take care of this. But he didn't do that.
No.
He asked her to slip her foot out of her boot, and she says, no, I can barely feel my foot. The crystal is pressing so hard. There's no way to get the boot off. So that gives you a little more indication of how restrictive
squeezing.
It is.
Squeezing. She tries to phaser it.
Yes, another quibbling bit. What we know of who's in the boot, phasering the rock should inflict some damage to the entity.
Oh, yeah. What we learn later, if the entity actually phasers itself, this is a bit of a
rule change. This is a big quibble. I hear you.
Yeah, there's no way out of this quibble.
No, because
if the rock is part of the entity, then the entity is phasering itself, and it would have
damage.
Yeah,
for want of a better word.
Unless the phaser is just
unstunned.
No, it's just yeah, it could be on stunt or but it's still part of the entity, the phaser itself, correct?
No,
And the
there's a
no,
physical
it's
phaser. He picks it up later.
yeah.
From oh, okay.
Yeah, he picks it up later and points it at the entity when he figures all this out. Yeah, this is a big
So
quibble. I don't have a way out of this one.
the entity brought a phaser down there with them,
No,
is
the
what you're
entity
saying.
took Kira's phaser, I would think.
Oh, yes, correct. So that is Kira's actual phaser then. That makes
I
sense.
think so.
Okay.
All right, good catch. All right, well, that's the end of the episode, everybody.
We're
Thank you very
done.
much.
We are done. Good job, gentlemen. You guys look good.
So where are you going for dinner?
Yes, let's have Thai food, I think, is a good
Good
choice for
guy.
tonight.
I'll
Yeah.
join you on that. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's just keep going and just let's forget we know this right now. She phasers her rock foot, and it
It
grows
goes.
much bigger. Odo tries to beam him out. Too much interference in this seismic moonquake planet moon.
When you're saying too much interference, now I'm abbreviating that to TMI. That's a whole new way of
It's
doing TMI. And
there's.
earlier when Armin was talking about, my quibble is when she phasered the rock, all I could think about was Dwayne Johnson was there and being phasered by,
You have
huh?
the most creative mind of
Yes, he does. He
substituting
does.
in acronyms and puns, and
And
you should
Johnson was the
write.
person holding the lantern, because that's where the light comes from.
That's
Yes,
right. Dwayne the
exactly.
Rock Johnson was in the cave with the
Oh,
lantern.
exactly.
Yes.
All right.
Okay, let's
Well,
go. Sorry.
yeah,
Let's go.
Odo says, I can't get, us beamed out of here. I'm going to walk back to the runabout and try to figure this out. Yeah, he goes, I'm going to walk back to the landing site, try to transport you from there. So maybe that'll work, reverse transporting. But at the end, there is a little exchange where Kira says, "Are you worried about leaving me?" Which is a little telling, like, and Odo says, "Yes, now that you mention it, yes."
Did your red flag come up right there?
Kira self-aware,
Yeah.
yes.
Okay.
And by the way, I wonder if Nana, because she knows the end of the story, how differently she was playing this from herself. It seemed different to me.
It did seem different. I think she did take that into
Oh,
consideration.
definitely.
I don't know
Yeah.
for sure. I mean, she's never spoken to me about it,
Right.
but it did seem from the playing that there was a slight difference.
Something was off about it, yeah. And at times early on, I was like, oh, is she just, to use a judgment call on it, is it like bad acting or something? Or something seemed odd about it. And I think she was playing a bit of the end of what we come to learn,
Yeah.
that this wasn't authentically the Kira speaking here,
Right.
the real
Right.
Kira. Okay, so the next scene is at Quark's. We're in Quark's bar, the A story, as I like to call it, Armin.
And I like to call it the A
The B
story.
story. I mean, the A story, excuse me.
Rom is trying to repair a replicator, and I think Nog is there, Quark is there. Well, Quark arrives, and Quark is very rude, in my opinion.
Yes, he
Very
is.
rude. He's very dismissive and blaming everything on Rom. In fact, I think he says everything that goes wrong here is your fault.
It's in your contract.
It's in your contract, exactly. And then Rom agrees with him. He goes, "You're right, uncle, I or brother, I should have explained this better." So Rom is just
Guff, a
taking
lot of guff.
all the blame. Yep. And Nog is clearly embarrassed. I feel bad. You see Nog just not happy with how this exchange is going. And that's when Jake arrives. Jake shows up, and he thinks this whole thing with his dad was a joke about joining Starfleet. Nog gets very mad in the scene. He says he was serious. And he says his reasons are personal. So he doesn't tell Jake why. Tells Jake to leave, in fact, at the end of the scene. So a lot happens in this scene, yeah.
Yes, and it's a growing arc for Nog as well. He's not only made a decision to join Starfleet, but I think it's the first time we've been seen him actually very serious about saying, Jake, get out, stop. He's done it comically before, but this was a very sort of telling moment. He did, and of course Jake doesn't understand, which I thought that he played incredibly well.
Yeah. Yeah, Nog says there's nothing to figure out here. I'm joining Starfleet, and that's that. Now, if you don't mind, I have a lot of work to do. Yeah, very adult. Yeah.
And reinforces the quizzicalness of Sisko. I don't understand why you want to do this. Even Nog's best friend doesn't understand why he
Yeah.
wants to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
We do see a cool establishing shot of this magical moon planet with the shuttle with the runabout on it, and it's kind of a beautiful shot. I don't know
Yes,
if
it
they
is.
did models. I don't know how, what that shot, how they made that shot, but it was cool. I thought it was very cool. I'm not usually blown away by establishing shots, but this was a good one.
Oh, good. We're back in the runabout. Odo is trying to beam Nana, beam Kira out of there. But there's a atmospheric ionization that is inhibiting a transporter lock. Odo says, "Can you compensate?" Computer says, "No." Or Major Barrett says no. And then essentially, Odo is like, okay, I need to launch a communications probe to broadcast our whereabouts so we can get some help from Deep Space Nine. Probe is launched. Odo says, how long can we expect help to come from Deep Space Nine? And the computer says, oh, 2 days. And at that point, he's like, he's beside himself because he doesn't have 2 days to save
No,
Kira.
because there's moonquakes.
There's moonquakes, there's expanding crystals.
It's
Yeah,
expanding crystal, I think, more than the moonquakes, but go
yeah.
ahead. Go ahead, Kirk, because
It's
I have another quibbling bit coming
Oh,
up.
say it, please. Jump.
Okay. So he finds out it's going to take 2 days because of the interference and stuff like that.
Correct.
If he was in space, how long would it take for him to communicate with a Deep Space Nine?
Almost
Probably
instantaneously.
instantaneously. How long would it take for him to fly that ship, which we've seen he's capable of, to fly that ship out of the moon and its surrounding aura, and fly into space and make that call?
Probably
Pretty quickly.
minutes, minutes, seconds.
Yeah, because the
Okay, you're
runabout
right.
is not damaged.
No.
The runabout is not crash landed here. They're not. No.
No.
Oh.
If he really wants to save Kira, all he needs is a 5 minute trip into space, or let's make it twice as long, a
10
10-minute
minutes.
trip into space, make the call, and then take 10 minutes to go back to Kira in the cave. I just went, no, this just doesn't make sense to me. Also, as far as getting Kira out, now the crystal may be embedded in the moon very deeply. I don't know. But if I were Odo and capable of transforming into anything, I would transform myself into a gurney and we'll put her on the gurney or put her
There's a
on the
lot of
gurney.
solutions here that they just are not trying because they want
Or,
to have.
well, or what do you call it when you a medical person puts their arm around you and you help them out?
Oh,
Is she
yeah.
attached to the earth? I suppose she is, and that, but anyway, so forget about the gurney. I still think he could have gone into space and communicated ASAP with
Yeah.
Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, he's
Or
only got one solution, this kind of vibration frequency thing that he keeps
yeah.
trying that's getting him nowhere.
Well, we haven't gotten to that yet, but yes, I mean, but Team Quibble and Bits strikes again. Yes, you're right. He could have given that message by
Just fly out of
flying the
there.
runabout out of. Actually, he could have flown out and flown back to Deep Space Nine to give that message in person
Gone
and
all the
got
way back
gotten.
there.
He could have gone all the way back and come back in enough time to save her. And also, why didn't he try to dig around or underneath the rock? Like, because we don't know how far it goes down.
That's right.
Here's an analogy I have for what you're saying.
Yeah.
So here I am in Vancouver in this apartment, and let's say I wanted to get a hamburger from the place on the corner. And I'm trying to get DoorDash on my phone. And I'm like, "Ah, oh, my phone, it's just I can't get DoorDash. I guess I'm going to starve to death." Or I could take the elevator down, go get my burger, and come back, and I wouldn't starve to death.
Exactly.
So basically,
That's the same thing.
it's like, yeah, that.
It's why I have
Oh.
a problem with the threat, this whole episode dealing with this threat. And I think there's so many ways to get around it. It isn't a life-threatening threat, no matter
Yeah.
what they tell me.
Yeah. I agree with you, but I like the A story with Nog.
Yes, so do I.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's just talk about the Nog scenes and skip everything with Kira and Odo from this point
But then
forward, if
you
that's
will wipe
okay.
away all my quibbles
I
and
know. They're
yes.
fun. They're fun. All right, we're back in the chamber. There's Odo heading back in the chamber. He hears phaser fire. Sounds like a battle going on where Kira is down the tunnel.
Right.
And there's another moonquake, and he runs back into this chamber, and the crystal is now up past her knees, growing more. Kira is armed. She says this Maquis fugitive found her, and they were exchanging shots, but they both missed. And Odo is examining the phaser marks, and he does comment. He said, "Boy, it was close. You didn't miss by much here. You were very lucky." So, these phaser marks are going to play an important part
Later.
later on. And Kira says, "You missed our friend. He came out of the tunnel. I think he was as surprised as I was, and he fired at me and then ran back down the tunnel."
And disappears for the rest of the episode.
And if Odo had just said, "Well, what did he look like?" and just started asking a few more questions, I think he would have busted open this whole con pretty quickly.
Probably.
But he does check out these phaser marks. Back on the promenade, up in the upper level, Bashir and Sisko are walking and talking. I like this little conversation. It has nothing to do with
It has,
anything.
yeah.
Absolutely
But it's
nothing.
lower decks. It really is
Yes, it
lower
is.
deck. It's just, this has nothing to do with anything, but let's just talk about a male
Ensign
being pregnant. Yeah.
Vilixapran. Ensign Vilixapran and his budding babies. So I don't know what Vilixapran, what species he is, but he, I guess, has egg sacs or something. He's going to have twins. He needs paternity leave, basically. Sisko's very happy for Ensign Vilixapran and grants him this reassignment for paternity leave. And they talk about their baby shower. O'Brien and Bashir are throwing a baby shower for him. It's very cute. It's very cute. They're going to put in an order with Garrick for some new baby clothes
Is that
for
how you
them.
say his name, though? Didn't he
Vilixapran?
separate? Didn't he say Vilix Prawn? But because the way you're
I don't
saying it,
know.
Robbie, it sounds like a new drug that they're advertising. Try
Vilixapran.
Vilixapran. It'll cause, it'll keep
Yeah.
you
It'll
from
cause you to get
incontinence.
pregnant.
Yeah, it'll cause some side effects are pregnancy, multiple pregnancies.
Yes.
That's good. Yeah.
Yes. I also like that O'Brien is building him a hatchling pond.
Yes.
We've never heard about these aliens. I
No,
want to meet
no,
them
no.
because they sound amazing.
Well, Robbie, this alien is actually, this ensign is actually referred to in two other episodes, future episodes. So
Oh, really?
this is a lower decker that they talk about, but we never see. So
Wow.
there's more conversation about
I can't wait.
Vilixapron later. So, yeah.
Can't wait. Sisko heads into Quark's, it looks like. Nog is at a counter with a customer, but he steps aside to talk to Sisko, asks him what he's decided. Sisko says, Nog has a very bad reputation, and he hasn't really, his behavior has not earned him this letter. And Nog does admit that he's made some mistakes, but he's going to do better. He just wants a chance.
I want to commend the background actor that is being served by Nog at the time because Nog completely ignores. They're in mid-conversation and Nog's like, yeah, what? Oh, there's Sisko. Boom, just leaves. And that background actor is like, what? What? It was
Yeah, I caught that
Funny.
too. I
Yeah.
love that. Yeah, that
It's
was
like,
great.
good job.
Good
A lot of
job.
times background actors, they don't put 100% into it. This one did. So yeah.
That's funny.
And Nog doesn't even say, I'll be back in a moment. I mean, the minute
Right.
he sees Sisko, he just leaves, which is very, very funny. And good on the background actor to play that because literally they could have just sat there with a blank face and not done anything. And they were a team player. Yeah.
We have another handshake moment here. Nog offers his hand at the end. Just give me a chance.
Yeah.
Holds out his hand, which I loved. In the commander's office, Sisko's talking to Dax here. And he tells Dax he wants Cargo Bay 12 inventoried again. And he wants Nog to do it. And Dax is like, we just did that last week.
Mm-hmm.
But Sisko wants him to do it all by himself because he tells Dax that Nog wants to join Starfleet. I love Terry's reading on this.
Oh, my God.
When she says...
so good.
Yeah, she says, I always thought it'd be interesting to have a Ferengi in Starfleet. But Nog? Yeah. She sort of turns her head.
Yeah.
It was very good reading.
It was, you know how comedy happens in threes, right? So so Sisko says, Dax says, Sisko says, I already have someone in mind for the job. Dax says, really? Who? Sisko says, Nog. Dax goes, Nog. And then Sisko goes, he asked for a recommendation to Starfleet Academy. And Terry goes, Nog? Like, so, and then she has a third one, you know, but Nog? And she played it perfectly. Each Nog built upon the prior Nog. So good job to Terry Farrell.
Yeah, it's very funny. Mm-hmm. Very funny. And Sisko insists he's got to do this alone. This is going to be a test to see how he does.
Well, the test is also because of the valuable equipment in there. Because there is going to be temptation for his former self, which is teenager Nog, getting into trouble, stealing things. And so, this is a true test.
Yep, a real test. Yeah. We're back down in our Moonquake chamber. Now she's Kira's got this rock crystal up to her waist, and she's scared and she's crying, and she thinks she's going to be completely covered in 12 hours. And then Odo has an idea because he reads these criminal activity reports and they give him ideas sometimes. So I guess a Nausicaan had used an ultrasonic generator to break into a museum, and somehow the vibrations from this ultrasonic generator were able to break the doors or the locks. So he decides he's going to try to build one of these things back at the shuttle. Now, it would have been much easier, Armin, if he'd done what you said. Just fly back to the station, get some help. No, instead, he's going to build from scratch a generator that he heard referenced in a police report.
Robbie, earlier you said that there was a bit of dialogue where Kira says, are you worried about leaving me alone? And that was a little bit of a flag for you, a red flag.
Yes.
You were like, oh, did the crying give you a bit of a red flag at all? Because it did for me. Yeah, because what have we seen of Kira so far? She's a battle-hardened individual. Yeah. She's seen it all. She's been in the worst circumstances. I do not think that she would even allow a tear to come out at this point. So that to me, I was like, wait, what's happening here?
Can you check the script and see if that's in there?
It does not say crying in that scene anywhere.
It does not.
So I would suggest then, knowing the nature of how the actors worked on that show, that this was Kira's choice. This was Nana's choice. Again, we go back to the question that you posed. Is she doing this because what we know about the entity, or is it just something that she thought because she was close to death, she as the character should cry? All I know was that was enormous red flag for me. I went,
me too.
Okay. No. So you guys both felt the same then.
Yeah, okay. I did too.
Yep.
Yeah. And I wasn't sure where it was coming from, but I didn't buy that the character would do that.
Right.
It didn't seem the character we've gotten
and
to know.
She sobs pretty much for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the squeezing, the behavior of kind of losing her breath, I don't know that worked for me. I wasn't quite clear on, I know she said she couldn't get her foot out of the boot because it was so tight, but I think that needed a little more attention.
And if we go back, sometimes a great notion, and she did play it once or twice, and maybe even in this scene that we're talking about now, where the ridiculousness of this little tiny thing being the cause of a possible death is ludicrous to the character. That's what made that scene so powerful, that he found it ridiculous that he was dying.
Yeah, I think there could have been some more authentic ways to have played this, even if we know what we know at the end. Even within that context, I think there could have been more interesting and authentic and complex ways of playing it rather than sort of the straightforward melodrama of tears and suffering. And yeah.
But what Armin just said, to play the ridiculousness of the potential or the imminent death.
Like, this is how I'm going to die?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Would not bring tears. You would not bring tears. If anything, laughter would be coming out, if anything.
It's just gallows humor.
Oh, this is ridiculous. Yeah. What? Yeah, it's just gallows humor, exactly.
Yeah. Mm.
Good call. Good pick. Good quibble.
Well, Kira does say that she promises to read those criminal activity reports if they get back. So
yes,
yes. She does. Next scene is in Cargo Bay. This is Dax telling Nog that due to a computer error, they just need to re-inventory this whole cargo bay again. And Sisko wants him to do it. And I think he says something like, when do you need it? And she says, oh, tomorrow morning will be fine, Nog. And he says, I'll have it for him tonight. He'll have it tonight before he gets off duty, Nog says. So he's very... yeah, very excited to do this and
determined.
Prove himself.
Yes.
We're back in the chamber again. Now Odo has finally brought in a light. This is the first time where I've seen a light source where they should have been in a
two,
dark
actually.
Cave.
There's two. Garrett
there's two
lights.
Of them, yes. There's two on the pedestal. And he's got a generator, this vibration generator there. But the crystal, the rock has now come
And
up
how
to,
did he bring those down? In a trolley, the same trolley that could have lifted her up and taken her out.
Yeah.
Unless he carried them. I suppose he could have carried them.
Maybe he carried them. But Kira's covered up to her collarbone now. She's all the way up. You know, this rock is all the way up almost to her neck. So she's struggling to talk. Very weak. Yeah, all of this. I would have liked to have seen your version, Armin, of the kind of laughing at this ridiculousness would have been interesting.
So, Robbie, you would not have had any weakness of voice at all through the entire ordeal.
Yeah, I think there's space for that. I think she's physically suffering, but I just don't know if the character would have kind of succumbed to this suffering quite so easily without a fight or without a little more attitude.
Yes, a little more sassiness that we're used to.
Yeah, it felt sort of straightforward soapy to me.
Yeah
so the question becomes, is Nanat trying to differentiate between herself and what she's playing? That's for me, the next time I see Nana, I really do want to ask her, was this a choice that she made?
Yeah.
Or is her mind scrambled because of the claustrophobia?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I'm very claustrophobic. If I were in her situation, that would have been tough.
Or maybe in reading the script, maybe Nana felt like, okay, this is Salome, you know, and if this is Salome, why wouldn't I bring out the tears and add the extra emotion to get anything out of Odo? So who knows? This is maybe her take on that.
Yeah.
But I think you should ask her, and I would love to know the answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's struggling to even talk. Odo wants to be back by tomorrow night. He starts trying to distract her with stories here.
Yeah.
And he talks about getting home by tomorrow night because he's got these plans with O'Brien, and Kira wants to hear about it. So Odo goes off on a long description of what he and O'Brien do, this kayaking. They go kayaking.
Yes. Yep. It's been established before in a prior episode that O'Brien does the kayaking holodeck program. So we do know of this.
We know of it, but he describes this whole thing and how dangerous and exciting it is. And Kira wonders, why does he keep doing it? Or why do you keep doing it if it's so dangerous? And I like Odo's line here where he says, humans have a hard time giving up something that they really love, even if it can hurt them.
Yeah.
I like that. That was a nice line.
Yeah, it was almost like talking about him and Kira in a way.
Yes,
that point,
absolutely.
Right? So, absolutely. But the funny part of this scene is when he talks about, well, if it helps at any, he's the one who does all the singing. And Kira's like, singing. Yeah, it's necessary to establish a smooth paddling rhythm to sing. And then Odo says, ancient human sea shanties mostly, particularly fond of one called Louie Louie, which again, very funny.
Yes, that was very funny.
Oh, gosh.
That was very funny.
Mm-hmm.
There's another big moonquake. This time, bit of an avalanche, rocks falling. So Odo turns into this protective dome. So he hasn't lost his skills.
No.
He turns into a dome, protects her.
I have no problems with that. Nope. My quibble is somewhere else. All of that makes perfect sense and good for Odo for doing that. It's a bottle show. That means they're trying to save money.
Why
It
are you
costs a
making him a
lot of
dome?
money to do, and usually we don't have any morphing scene in an episode after about the first season. There are much less morphing scenes because they're expensive. They're really expensive.
Yeah.
We have two in this episode. As a
That's true.
producer, wouldn't somebody have said, can we lose one of the morph scenes?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. I can imagine back then they were very expensive.
Oh, they were hugely expensive. That's why, I mean, they were expecting, in the beginning, Odo was supposed to morph all the time. And then they went, no, it's too expensive. We can't do that.
Yeah. Right, right.
And here they are in a bottle show morphing twice. Yeah.
Twice in a bottle show. That's antithetical, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're right.
I think there's a exchange about platitudes at the end of this that I thought was really funny.
He talks about, like, you know, we've been in tougher situations than this. And she says, right, well, name three. And he's like, that's not the response I expected for the detective novels that O'Brien gives me to read. When the hero says, we've been in tougher situations than this one, the friend
that's
always
what it
agrees.
Is. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's using these quotes and these platitudes. And she says, oh, well, I don't have much use for platitudes, Odo. I'd rather face the situation and go on from there.
Yeah.
I just thought that was nice.
It was
And
nice.
May I give kudos to the writers. Every time Odo poses a question that would require Kira to remember something from the past,
She avoids
she
it,
avoids it.
Yeah.
She avoids
Yeah,
it.
you're right.
And knowing what the ending is, quite brilliant of the writers.
Yes.
Never to have her answer something that might lead to a question about something that they did together.
Correct.
Or that he would know that she had done.
Right.
Yeah.
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 Quite brilliant. Yeah. When I saw it the second time, I went, oh, they're very smart about that.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. The little details.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You don't notice them at the moment, but looking backwards, like you say, you watch it a second time, and that's when you really notice those things.
Yeah.
We go to the Replimat next. Sisko is very impressed with Nog's work. Dax and Sisko are talking. Dax says Nog even found some things that they had missed before. So he went above and beyond.
He did.
Better than the Starfleet people had done themselves.
Better than Starfleet team that was probably assigned to do that.
Yes.
This is a single human, sorry, this is a single individual that
Yeah.
has found things that were not cataloged from
No, he's
before.
done a great
Yeah,
job.
really good.
But Sisko seems very focused on why. Why is this happening? He just doesn't understand
Right. Why does he
from
want
what
to
he
join
knows of
Starfleet?
Nog so far. Yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the moon chamber,
Yep.
in the moon pie chamber, Kira's head and fingers are just sticking out. I did like how her hand sort of came out of the rock. I couldn't tell how they did that, but it did look like she was really encased in that set piece. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Odo's trying to find the frequency to crack this thing. He cannot find it. He's cycling through all the frequencies, and he tells Kira the story of how he got his name in this scene.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Basically, they had to name all of these, experiments they had in the lab. They had to give them some kind of name for the records, and turns out they used a Cardassian word that means nothing. What is the word again? It's
Odo et al.
Odo et al,
Odo et al. Yeah, it means nothing. And then as a joke, they separated the names, the word Odo et al to a surname and a proper name, right? So Odo and then Ital was the last name, I guess. So to be funny.
But he does say in this scene that it stood for nothing, or
Right.
unknown sample originally, and then
Yes.
basically nothing.
Yeah.
But he said he feels like something now because of the friendships and the relationships he's made in DS9. He doesn't feel
Including
like it.
one with Quark, which I appreciated.
Yeah, he did put that in there. Yeah.
Kira's in bad shape in the scene, and she decides to order him. This is where she pulls rank. As your superior officer, I'm telling you to take that runabout and get the hell off this moon. That's an order.
Yeah. That sounds more like Kira. You know what I'm saying? That little part right there.
Yes.
That she
yes.
started to have a bit of a backbone and saying, nope, I'm ordering you. Get out of here, Odo. I like that.
All of that is good. Absolutely. So if he had followed the order, what about the being that's encased in the next chamber?
I don't know. I don't know what the plan was for that.
And I want to get back to that a little later.
Yeah, let's just hold that thought and keep going. But we come back from a commercial break after she's ordered, Kira's ordered Odo to leave. Kira's begging him to leave. He refuses. And basically, out of this argument they're having, this heated debate, this discussion. This
tense situation.
He admits finally that he's in love with her.
Ooh.
And then she admits the same thing. Odo, I'm in love with you too. Wow.
Right after Beriah.
Right after Beriah. Yeah, it did seem, I forgot about that, but you're right. It seems strange already to me. And then remembering that Beriah had just died. Yeah. Red
Captain
flag.
Quibble, your table is ready. Captain Quibble, your table is now ready.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we think maybe this is a good thing. They both admit they love each other. If you're fans of the show at this point, maybe that's a great thing. We go to the commander's office. This is where Sisko tells Nog that he's not going to write him a letter. Not going to do it. Nog is begging. He says it's not a scheme. It's not a whim.
Right.
Sisko demands that he tell him why he wants it. I have a quibble about Sisko grabbing Nog and shaking him. I didn't like that. I didn't like it because I don't think a superior officer needs to do that. The power dynamic, it just that seemed like a line physically to grab Nog and shake him like that.
All right. Aaron Eisenberg was interviewed about that particular scene.
Mm-hmm.
He said that when they were in rehearsal and every time they ran their lines, there was no blocking of the grab. But when the cameras were rolling, Avery made that choice to grab him. And that actually helped Aaron's performance. Aaron said, like, that it kind of startled me because we didn't practice that. We didn't rehearse that. Mm. So that grab was so startling. And he was so, insistent on getting that answer from me of like, why are you joining? And that literally, in his estimation, the best acting that he did in all of DS9. So he loved that scene.
Wow.
He loved the
fact it's a great scene. Yeah. I just wish the editors had cut around and removed the grabbing. I think from an objective standpoint, it seems excessive.
Overkill?
It seems borderline inappropriate with a child, with a young person to grab them and shake them that way.
Well, he's not a child anymore. He's an adult, remember?
He's his son's friend. Like, I wouldn't grab my children's friends and shake them. I don't know. You know, the rule following, the Starfleet kind of guy that he plays in so many other scenes, he seems to abandon that sometimes with Ferengi. It threw me a bit. I didn't like it.
Well, can I just read it directly instead of paraphrasing what I told you before? It says, there's a scene that we had rehearsed, but as soon as we shot it, he unexpectedly grabbed my shoulders and said, tell me, Nog, what is it? And it was awesome. These are Aaron's words. It was awesome because it forced me to come up to that level. I didn't back down. I blurted out because I don't want to be like my father. He is so professional. Avery is so professional. That was my favorite scene. It finally gave me, as an actor, something to really think about and deal with. It was emotional, and we really got to see the heart of Nog. And also, as an actor, I really had to come from a place and not just be on the surface. I was very well prepared when I did it. I didn't have any problems with the lines, and I was very proud of myself. So I just feel like, I don't think Aaron had any issues with it.
With all due respect to Aaron's words, and they're his experience, and I totally respect it. But having been a producer and a director for a long time now, 20 years, watching actors, I have seen sometimes actors will get a real satisfaction out of feeling something that's real. Oh, God, that felt good to me.
Right.
But it's not the story and it's not the character.
Okay.
And to me, I don't need an actor, the human actor, to actually feel anything. If they're performing a pretend story that's in line with the story we're trying to tell, Sure, if they feel something, if they feel satisfaction from having, you know, suffered in that moment in some way that feels authentic, but they don't have to feel anything, honestly. Like, so often, you know, I it's we're not, you know, I've often said to actors, like, this isn't therapy. This isn't like we're telling a story, and so we need to find the emotional journey that your character is experiencing, and then the action that your character is doing. That's what I want to see. So for Aaron, if he got there and had a great experience, great. But to me, he didn't need to feel it to reach that level. And he certainly didn't need another actor to force him to feel it. That's where I struggle. And it felt like that to me. It felt a bit like self-indulgent, I guess that
Okay.
would
I
be.
hear you.
And tangential to all this, and all of what you've both said is incredibly powerful and true. How did the cameraman feel when all of a sudden his shot changed while they were in the midst of shooting?
True. That's true.
Yeah, it's like I think there's a sweet spot where we can go through the mechanics as actors, as camera people, as whatever. You go through the mechanics that have all been pre-planned and yet stay open to some spontaneity, but within the safety of the agreement that we're pretending. This is all pretend. We're playing pretend right now. You know, when you lose the safety factor of someone, another actor physically, if you're doing a stunt, there's choreography. You've got to do your part and they have to do their part. Otherwise, someone gets hurt. And that's, to me, you know, a bit of a blurred line in that moment to me when I hear your story. And I didn't even know that. I thought they had chosen to do the shaking. So knowing that it was not planned, in my mind, makes it even worse in a way that I like it less. If that makes sense.
Yeah, and again, to play the devil's advocate to what Armin was saying about the cinematographer, the director of photography, the camera operator,
The focus
focus
puller.
puller, exactly. I also feel that I think Avery probably knew, okay, this is not a single, it's a two shot. We're both going to be in it. You know, if I reach forward a little bit, it's not going to change too much. You know, I feel that
Good
that's a little
answer.
bit of
Good
a yeah.
answer. Good
That's why I'm
answer.
going to go with that. But I do find this so interesting because when he says that he doesn't want to be like his father, he goes into detail. He talks about how his father, Ram, has been chasing profit his whole life, but what has it gotten him? Nothing, because he doesn't have the lobes to always chase profit like Quark does, and neither do I. That's just not our makeup. And a Ferengi without profit, as Sisko says in Nog Answers, is no Ferengi at all. And so now, to me, what's interesting is you have this parallel of this story about not of being nothing as a Ferengi and Odo, his name being nothing as well. You know, there's this kind of weird parallel that I don't even know if the writers even knew this happened in this episode, but it's there for me. I thought, wow, that's deep. It's insightful. You know, I mean, Nog feeling like he's not worthy or not a Ferengi without having the profit, and you know, making that decision that he doesn't want to chase profit. He wants to go for Starfleet Academy. He wants to go
We also
become a member
looks
of Starfleet.
because he looks at his dad and he says, you know, it mentions his dad is a mechanical genius,
Yes.
that he could have been a head engineer if he had
Yeah.
chosen to follow his own path and his
Right.
own strengths, but
Right.
instead he kept doing the same thing that everybody does,
Right.
you know, walking the same path that his father and his father before him and everybody else.
Yeah,
So
he went into business
doesn't
like a
want to
good
end, he
Ferengi.
doesn't, yeah, he
Yeah.
doesn't want to end up like that.
Yeah, and in that part, that exact little bit of dialogue, that monologue there, then it became very introspective for me because to be a good Asian, you go into medicine. You know what I'm saying? You become a doctor. And I kind of felt like, oh my gosh, I'm sort of the Nog in real life. And because I went into the arts, which is frowned upon in Asian culture to become an actor, which is frowned upon in Ferengi culture to go into Starfleet or even think of becoming part of Starfleet, as we shall see later in Quark's reaction to the decision at the
I
end of the
think that
episode.
theme, and you know, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but like the theme of this episode and the themes of this episode are really interesting, and I think they're best played out in this Nog story. It does feel like the story, even though I think the other story, the Kira Odo story, wanted to play out some of those themes in a great way. It didn't quite play it out as well as this Nog story. This
No,
Nog story.
So this arguably is the A storyline for all of us.
I think it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with Armin on this. I like the story.
To add on to what you said, and you'll get more of this when you ask me about the themes of the show, I think the fact that when cultures intermingle is the opportunity for one culture to influence the other. And I think what's happened, why does he want to be in Starfleet? I mean, there's many paths he could take besides Starfleet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because he has been living with Starfleet people and influenced by their ideas, by their goals, by their achievements. It's because he's living in a foreign culture. If I may, Garrett, just as you were not living in Korea, you're living in the United States, where the opportunity to be a performer isn't necessarily frowned upon.
Correct.
And therefore is open to you because you're living or in an alien culture.
That's a valid point. That's a very valid point. So after Nog explains himself, this is when Sisko now understands the full picture, and he agrees to send that letter of commendation, at which point Nog is so excited. He goes to hug Sisko. And Robbie, I want to ask you, can you please look at the script? Is that in there where Nog reaches in for a hug of Sisko at the end? Because I feel like that may not be.
It may not be, because Aaron was a hugger.
Yes.
He liked to hug people.
That looked like an Aaron Eisenberg move, and I wanted to see if that indeed was Aaron's impetus. So
tit for tat, if that wasn't in, that's the response to being clutched.
No, it's not in there. It says Nog is overwhelmed after Sisko says they'll send the letter.
Yeah.
They talk a little more. Sisko smiles. Not entirely sure if Nog is right, but willing to take that chance. That's how the scene ends.
Yeah. Wow. So I think what, if I may, and again, I'm putting words into people's mouths, but if you've already broken the structure by grasping by, you know, that, then the other actor feels, okay, then I have the liberty to do something as well.
To add my hug.
Yeah, add my hug.
If you're going to grab me by my shoulders, I'm going to give you a bear hug is what I'm going to do. Yes, I like that.
Great. We go back down to the moon chamber.
Yes.
This thing is up to her chin now, this crystal. She's almost covered. Odo's looking at these phaser marks on the wall. He's back to that, still studying them. And basically, Odo realizes Kira has been lying to him this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
That he says he knows her far too well. He points a phaser at her, and then she ultimately turns into a changeling, into a founder. The founder explains that she wanted to make Odo think that Kira had died and that maybe he would return to his people. And Odo says that near the end of the scene, never, that's never going to happen. He wants to know where Kira is. And she tells him, and then the founder tells him, and then the founder transports out of there.
Does she transport out? Is that how it happens?
Where does she go?
Yeah.
Where does she go? There's no other ship there.
You know what? Maybe the moon was her ship. Maybe the entire moon was just morphed into, the ship morphed into a moon, and then, boop, who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I've went, where are you going?
Yeah, where are you going?
Where are you going?
Back to the Gamma Quadrant. Okay.
Yeah, Odo uses his detectiving skills here and figures this out. It feels a bit like a classic Odo solving the crime scene. You know, I've been trying to figure out what's going on. Something about this didn't seem right. Too many coincidences.
So that was an interesting word for me, coincidences. Coincidence means when two things happen at the same time that aren't necessarily related. That's correct. A coincidence for me. When did that happen in the episode? When two things happened at the same time that aren't related, something could be wrong, something can be off kilter, but they're not coincidences.
Mm-hmm.
That's a strange word for the writers to use.
Yeah, it is. It is a strange word. He's really, the key to this is these marks on the wall.
Yeah.
Because he asks, how tall was he? Was he my height? No, Kira says, no, shorter. Like this, more or less. And Odo says, well, if this was his position and he was shorter, then you're blocking those phaser hits. There's no way that those... So he figures out that that's a lie.
Yeah.
And then, forgive me if I've missed it, but... and then Odo does something he never does. ever does and complains about it, is adamant, it's against his philosophy. He lifts a gun. He hates guns.
He
never uses one. Even when he's in trouble, he never has a phaser in
that's
it.
Right. This is the first time he's holding a gun. Am I right?
It's ever the first time he's ever held a gun.
Yeah.
I suppose he's so moved by the fact that he's been hornswoggled that he's forgotten his own philosophy. But it is worth to point out he never picks up a gun, and yet here he has. Perhaps it's right. Perhaps it is, but it is a first.
And he's picking up a gun and pointing it at the love of his life, who he's not certain that she's not the love of his life at this point.
Yeah.
He's willing to roll the dice on that.
Here, there might have been a mention of Baril. You know,
yes,
you just lost Baril and you're telling me you love me?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That could have been in there. Yeah. I also didn't like the founder saying what she said at the end. She said she is never going to love you. How could she? Yeah. You're a changeling. It's almost like, well, are you saying changelings suck? Or are changelings are the worst people to ever be? I mean, I don't know. It bummed me out.
If I may, Garrett, I think that goes back again to what I just mentioned before about cultures. Yeah. Cultures not mixing. Mm. And that cultures, when they do mix, things do happen. Yeah. But what she's insisting is culture shouldn't mix. And how can one culture, when someone from one culture love someone from another culture?
Mm.
And I think there are cultural differences, just as humans in the B story are suggesting that a Ferengi in Starfleet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of racist or speciist, however you want to call it, right?
Yeah, so.
Speciist.
How dare you be a speciist? Okay.
Well, we cut to a side chamber. Odo runs in, finds Kira in a stasis kind of box or something. The moonquakes are getting bad. He opens it up.
And she pops out.
What am I doing here? She says.
There needs to be a moment of acclamation to going from complete stasis to being, awake, right?
But awake, she's like, and conscious,
hey.
And aware.
It's almost like she was behind a curtain, right? And she's like, hey, I'm here. It's like, what?
Well, they run out. We cut back to the station. We're in an airlock. Odo and Kira walk out. And Odo's explaining that he figured all this out because she said something to him that gave it all away. It's something that Kira would never say. And Kira asks, well, what was it? And he goes, oh, a slip of the tongue. Nothing important.
Sad.
Oh,
just sad.
Odo.
Sorry.
Tell her. Tell her what you said. Maybe.
Exactly.
I don't, So there's still.
Because he doesn't tell her, the arc of either character is not advanced.
No.
One of the things that is so wonderful about our series is that we never, for the most part, we build upon what was said in the last episode or the last couple of episodes, and we build upon it. And it's a erector set, and we're gradually building a structure. So what really bothers me about the B story here is that it doesn't progress anything. Yeah. I've watched this B story, and I'm no further along in the understanding of these characters or of this program or what their situation is, not one iota, because it's all erased.
Right.
When he says just a slip of the tongue.
Yeah.
I wonder, has he ever said out loud that he loves Kira?
No, but other people have said it. Luana Troi.
Luxana Troi.
He made a big speech and said,
That's true.
And we seen him look at, I mean, the scene when there's the Bajoran festival and he wants to be near her, we know what's in his mind and in his heart.
Yeah.
So it's not a surprise that he's finally spoken. It's hard for him to say it, absolutely. And kudos to my friend Renee for that performance. But it's not a surprise to the viewer.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, nothing moves forward. Nothing moves forward. Well, let's get to the story where something does move forward. We're in Quark's. Quark is arguing. Absolutely not. No, you are not going to Starfleet Academy. And Quark says his mind is made up. He absolutely forbids it. And Rom
stands up for.
He stands up for him. Yeah, he says that as far as the bar goes, you can be in charge. But when it comes to my son, I make the decisions. Quark says, fine. Then you tell him he can't go. So Quark is expecting Rom's going to say the same thing. And instead, Rom says, good luck. He'd be proud to have a son at Starfleet. And big smile, Big, big smile. I love. Yeah, I love the ending of this.
This is a really big scene because we never see Rom with a backbone. We don't.
No.
Not when it's dealing with Quark. I'm sorry. Quark is the end all be all for every single episode up until this point. And so in this scene, it's just like
big
I think the
forward.
Audience is left. Yeah, we're all of our chins are on the floor, like, what? He stood up to Quark finally. It's just, oh my God. So it's a big scene.
And Armin, I would argue they end the episode with this scene. And usually you end an episode with the A story. You don't end it with the B story. So I think you may be right.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was written. In fact, let me go back to the script.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was written as the last scene or if, yeah, I guess it was.
I love Quark's last line, which it's perfect. You're both insane. Like that. It's like it's the economy of the lines here. It's just I just love it.
And it is the first step for both of them in changing their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so, unlike what I just said about the B story, this does make a difference. This episode does make a difference for those characters.
Yeah, they're moving forward. There's something that is happening now in their lives. Yeah. Good job.
Great.
Now knowing everything about the episode, I want to repeat the Twelfth Night quote.
Okay.
I have said much unto a heart of stone and laid mine honor too uncherry out. There's something in me that reproves my fault, but such a headstrong, potent fault it is that it but mocks reproof. So, He admitted his Odo admits his love, even though it hurts, but it's so potent, it's so headstrong that he can't help himself, and it mocks anyone saying you shouldn't have said that. Mm-hmm. I think if they were relating the title of the episode to that quote, I think that's what happens in what we call the B story.
Great.
Right.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
It came to me late in the viewing of this episode, but my moral I wrote down is my theme, my lesson. You can choose a different path than those that came before you. That's all good.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Both A and B story, that was true. Odo was choosing a different path than his people, and so was Nog.
Yeah. Okay. Armin.
So I've sort of already indicated, I have two, but I've sort of indicated the first one, but I'll repeat it. Beings from different cultures can forswear their racial prejudices, and by the influence of living in alien cultures, learn to be affected by another culture's influence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of what I said before. There is another one that also came to me, which is for both stories. Learn to trust your heart and make bold moves.
Mm.
I like that one. That applies to both stories, and I like that a lot. Yeah. Great.
Yeah, mine is don't be afraid to choose the road less traveled.
Great.
So both we're all in the same boat. The same page.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the Patreon poll for the theme/lesson/moral of this episode, as submitted by Rob, is you are more than where you come from.
Very true.
I like that too. Thank you everyone for tuning in to our recap and discussion of Heart of Stone. Please join us next time when we will be recapping and discussing the episode Destiny with Terry. So thank you again to Armin for joining us for this one.
My pleasure.
Yes. And everyone else, Patreon patrons, please stay tuned.